Today we're going to move on a little bit to get into Aseret HaDibrot. We got like locked into the Aseret HaDibrot. We're doing the Rav on Shmot, but when we hit the Aseret HaDibrot, we became focused on it. So maybe a shir or two today and next week, we'll just wrap up the Aseret HaDibrot section, because for 2 weeks afterwards, I'm going to be in Chutz Laaretz. So the 13th and the 20th. I'm going to be in New York. We have a family wedding, Baruch Hashem, and my mother-in-law just celebrated her 95th. Thank God. And when I told her, Me'ev Esrim V'Shtayim, my grandfather always wished 122 because he said there's inflation, so you have to take that. You have to consider that. And my mother-in-law said she's taking it very seriously. She means it. She's really good. Baruch Hashem. So today we'll deal with the subject of Lo Tisa et Shem Hashem Elokecha Lashav, the third of the Aseret HaDibrot. So after Anochi Hashem Elokecha, and the flip side, Lo Yir Lecha Elohim Achirim Al Panai. Let me just shut this down. The awareness that Kadosh Baruch Hu exists, and to the exclusion of any other deity. You can't have both. You cannot have that God exists, but there's also other deities around there, and we're being very pluralistic about this. The Rambam calls this Avodah Zarah Beshituf, and Beshituf means partnership. You cannot have that. You cannot have a situation where you have a recognition of God and you have a recognition of other deities. It's got to be exclusive. As we say in the Tefillah, Ein Od Milvado. Ein Od Milvado. None other. When the Aseret HaDibrot goes on to talk about Lo Tasa Lecha Pesel B'chol Tmuna, forms and shapes and pictures and some things of this nature, those are details. Those are illustrations of Avodah Zarah. The root of Avodah Zarah, of idolatry, is the negation of awareness that God exists. It's the flip side of Anochi Hashem Elokecha. So the Rambam tells us that if one agrees with principle one, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, then automatically, ipso facto, the person negates Avodah Zarah. If a person agrees with any tenet of Avodah Zarah, it automatically is a demerit on Anochi Hashem Elokecha. You cannot have both. They are linked, they go together, what we call in the Gemara expression, Habba Hatalia. One is linked to the other. And that is very, very important. Because apparently Yahdut does not tolerate atheism. Atheism is a word that talks about somebody who doesn't believe in any divinity whatsoever. So you may say, all right, listen, this one is Jewish, this one's Christian, this one's Muslim, and this one's Buddha, and this one's that, and that, and that, and that. And the other guy doesn't believe in any religion. There's no God, simply as that. So the halacha view somebody who so claims that he or she does not believe in any God, that the person is an Oved Avodah Zarah. But which deity is he or she serving? The answer is, Lo Yelecha Elohim Achim Al Panai. If it's not going to be HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's going to be something else that represents the most serious and supreme idea of creation to you. In all likelihood, it's you yourself. You may think that you are the most important part of the created world. Or you might think it's some rock star, or it might be some place in the world. What?
Liberalism.
Right, it could be some ideology. The Rav said this. You were there at the shir when the Rav said this? No? The Rav said this at a tshuva drasha. It's imprinted ala tshuva. Remember when we talked about this? All the isms, right? Liberalism. He spoke about democracy, and he even spoke about Zionism as an ideology. He says you can end up worshipping the ideology, which is the reason why you wake up in the morning, because of that ideology. So whether it's socialism, communism, whatever it may be, you have this ideology. It could be a political ideology, an economic ideology, it could be a social ideology. Whatever the ideology is, it's the reason why you wake up in the morning. What makes you tick? What drives you to do things? If it's not a Kadosh Baruch Hu on the top of the list, that's a Avodah Zarah, because you place something else. The Kadosh Baruch Hu is not there. But that vacancy does not remain open. That vacancy is filled by something else. And it can become filled by yourself. I remember when the Rav talked about Zionism. So the Rav was a Tzioni and spoke very, very enthusiastically about religious Zionism. But he was trying to say, if If the whole thing focuses on Zionism as an ideology, and that's what it is, but if Kadosh Baruch Hu is not in the picture, then it's Avodah Zarah. See, and democracy too. Look, we agree with what President Kennedy said at that time in Berlin, 1961. He said, democracy may not be the best system of government, but we don't have to build a wall to keep our people in. Beseda, we agree with that. We all understood what he was saying at the time. And we also agree that democracy is fundamentally a Jewish idea. It's a Torani idea, even though where do you find in the Chumash or any places in the Neviim Uktuvim that there's a system of government that has to do with going to the poll? So going to the poll is and voting for a government, whether you go once a year, once every 4 years, or once every 10 years, is just a system of how to work out the democracy. Democracy in its pristine fashion, Athens, going back many, 2,500 years ago, meant demo. Demo is the population. Krat means rule. It's the rule of the people. That's all democracy means. How they rule, different parasha. So if the whole society is just a little shtetl of 1,000 people, so perhaps the adult population, of course in those days the adult male population, would get together and discuss everything. And that would be the council, because there were no representatives. The whole concept of pure democracy is that everybody discusses everything. But that can work only when the society is very, very small. Once you have larger cities, you cannot administer a place by every single decision that has to be made. All right, let's call everybody together and vote on it. Look what happened, in Britain when they're talking about the vote to leave the European Union. So that was something that has tremendous implications on the country. So they do such a mishal am. What's the word in English? A referendum. Do such a referendum. So occasionally in the United States, a state has a referendum. I don't remember a national referendum, I don't remember. But I remember states used to have referendums on certain issues. Besada, so that you can bring it to the people as a referendum. But those are, very cardinal issues. But what was developed ultimately, it was by the days of England 1,000 years ago, representative democracy, a concept of a parliament. So the people go to the polls and they vote for delegates, and delegates are supposed to represent them. That's the whole idea. So take the United States, for example. So of course, there's a Congress, there's a two houses of a Congress. Again, that's details. Two houses of a Congress, one house of a Congress, of a parliament. The Roman Senate already also had democracy. Now the question is, who's eligible to vote? So the United States in 1776 was also a democracy, except that women didn't have the right to vote, except the blacks didn't vote, and yen a democracy. So the democracies were all tarnished and limited until people liberalized and realized that, there are also people, and they deserve the right to vote. And this you have in various countries in the world, where democracies sometimes are limited. The question is why they're limited, and so on. But the idea that there would be a governing body, say George Washington did not believe the average guy on the street was capable of making the decision as to who should vote be president of the United States. And therefore you have to have the Electoral College. The Electoral College really means that legally about 550 people are voting for the president of the United States. That's all it is. And what's everybody doing, the millions of people voting on election day? They're voting for the delegates. That's all. That's the Electoral College. And that idea you already have in the Sanhedrin. We read it just a few, depends where you were. If you're Chutz Laaretz, we read it last Shabbat, and for Eretz Yisrael, we read it 2 weeks ago, Parshat Baalotcha, Esfali ish shivim ish mizikne Yisrael, choose a body of 70, and those 70 are going to represent all of Klal Yisrael. Now, it wasn't that the nation went to the polls to select 70 members of the Sanhedrin or Beit Din HaGadol out of a list of 500, let's vote. That's not the way it worked. The Kadosh Baruch Hu recommended that these people kick off the Beit Din HaGadol. But subsequently, there was a procedure of how somebody becomes elevated to the status of the Beit Din HaGadol. And when Am Yisrael had to make decisions, for example, appointment of a king, the Rambam says that it is absolutely critical that the Sanhedrin is there approving the suggestion that Shaul HaMelech will be king, approving that David HaMelech will be king, which means that they actually had right of veto. Now here it sounds very odd. Shmuel HaNavi comes and suggests the person, and then the Beit HaGadol has to ratify it. And what if they don't ratify it? And who cares about the ratification? HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Shmuel HaNavi didn't think of it, you know, from his head. It's a nevuah, it's a prophecy. So why did the Beit Nakadol have to raise their hands, 70 Dayanim, say yes, Kadosh Baruch Hu needs a Hechsher? I mean, what is this all about? So both the Rav Zichron Lebracha and Rav Kook Zichron Lebracha both explained this identically, that the use of the Sanhedrin is to get the approbation of Klal Yisrael. That really, Klal Yisrael has the authority to appoint kings. But instead of bringing it to a big fight or a big vote, you know, however you're going to do it, here the Navi suggests a candidate. But if Am Yisrael, for whatever reason, rejects the candidate, then a Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to have to, as if to say, go back to the drawing boards and come up with another candidate. The people have to ratify the choice. And if they do not accept it, then it's not binding. Then it's not binding. It's very important that the people feel that they accepted the king. And it wasn't like, you know, pushed upon themselves, on them, and they had no choice about it. They did have a choice. Did have a choice. So Rav Kook took it a step further. He said, in the absence of nevuah, prophecy, in the absence of a functioning Sanhedrin, the authority still rests in the people. And therefore, when we go to vote in a national election in this country, we are in partial fulfillment of the mitzvah, Som Tasim Alech HaMelech, appoint a king. So it's not the way the Rambam spells it out, but nevertheless, it still has the sanction of Klal Yisrael. Yeah.
How did it operate in the days of the Shoftim, for example? There, God recommended who should be the Shoftim.
Right.
Was there any authority that gave him the...
According to the Rambam, the Sanhedrin function. According to the Rambam, the Sanhedrin had to give its rubber stamp approval.
In the days of the Shoftim.
For sure. For sure. Have to give it's and the Rambam even goes so far to say that when Moshe Rabbeinu appoints Yeshua, now that's in the Chumash already in Parshat Pinchas, and that's where the word smicha shows up for the first time. V'samachta yado, to place his hands on Yeshua. So later it becomes symbolic. We call it smicha, but originally it was smichat yadayim on Yeshua. And you do not see in the process of appointment of Yeshua any assistance that Moshe Rabbeinu receives in the process. He just does it. Kadosh Baruch Hu says, do it, and he does it. So Rambam says that Yeshua was appointed by Moshe Uveit Dino and his court, and his Sanhedrin that was appointed in Parshat Balotcha, Shivimish. Why? It seems a little strange. So the Rav made a very interesting distinction between when the Rambam says Moshe Rabbeinu alone and Moshe Rabbeinu uveit dino. He says whenever Rambam talks about Moshe Rabbeinu instituting something, so then it becomes an institution of Torah. Moshe Rabbeinu did not need the assistance of anyone when it came to interpretation of Torah or explaining something, because Moshe v'Torato emet, the absolute truth by Moshe Rabbeinu. Whereas those areas where the Sanhedrin, that were not interpretation of Torah, but rather delegation of Klal Yisrael, the Moshe Rabbeinu could not work alone. He had to have the Sanhedrin at his side because they were the body that would represent all of Klal Yisrael. You should know that when you go back to Parshat Balotcha, so it says number 70. What happened was each of the Shvatim suggested six names. Now 6 times 12 is 72. And that was the whole thing of Eldad and Medad. They were the big losers here. They were not incorporated into the Sanhedrin, but nevertheless they kept prophesying. And that's what Yeshua catches what they're saying, that Moshe is going to die in the Midbar and Yeshua is going to bring them in. And Yeshua tells Moshe Rabbeinu, you got to silence these people. And Moshe Rabbeinu says, "Umi yiten kolam neviim halavai, that everybody would be a navi." You know, listen, thank God we have another 2 neviim on board. And even though they're not members of the Beit Nagadol, nevertheless, they are the important people and so on. So what you see from this, that originally the idea would have been that there was a equal distribution of the 70 or 72 amongst all of Klal Yisrael. So it very much represented the nation. And today, when we vote, so Rav Kook didn't like the concept of miflaga because it comes from the word pilug. Pilug means division. And you know, Rav Kook suffered from allergic reactions when he talked about divisions. He didn't like that word at all, miflaga. But recognizing that there would be different candidates and we would have to vote, and the vote would be binding because majority rules. Majority rules is a pasuk. Acharei rabim lahatov. And in these areas, for public issue, we do follow the majority. I think I mentioned to him more than once that my father, Avshalom, the first time he voted in the election here in 96, walked out of the polling box and met a Shechianu. So I asked him, I said, where does it say in Shulchan Aruch, HaMatzbiya B'Pam Rishana M'Vareich Shechianu, Yesh Davar Kaze in Shulchan Aruch? My father says, the first time in his life he fulfilled the mitzvah, Som Tasim Alecha Melech. So doesn't it deserve a Shechianu? Now that's a tziyani, you know, that's the kind of house that's the kind of house I grew up in.
You're not really voting for the leader, you're voting for a party.
You're voting for a party that pulls together the leader. But your point is well taken. You're voting for a party, but the party makes the coalition. Coalition, the party that has the largest plurality in the Knesset, usually, but it becomes the prime minister. So to a large degree, you are voting for prime minister. It's indirect. It's indirect.
President's
on the other. President is...
No, fix on somebody...
Right, but that's procedural. That's procedural. He can do whatever he wants, president. But that's procedural. The Knesset votes for the president. We don't vote for the president. But that's what we do. And we are to a certain degree fulfilling the mitzvah of Som Tasim Alecha Melech by voting. Irrespective of what comes out of the election, by the way, because we know that Eliyahu Navi had derech eretz for the Malchei Yisrael from the Northern Kingdom, who were idol worshippers. And in spite of the fact that, you know, they're on the wrong side of the fence, these Malachim, nevertheless, Eliyahu Navi recognizes that they have a halacha of a melech, and you have to really treat them properly. Yeah.
I think one of the problems you have today is that people believe in different ideologies and claim that that's Judaism.
That's a different problem. Okay. Okay, it's a problem. I agree. It's a problem. Okay, so just getting back to the point. Atheism is non-recognized, but should not recognize, because somebody recognizes something else that's supreme importance to them in life. The Rav said that's called Avodah Zarah, as lo yeh lecha Elohim achirim al panai. But then the third of the Aseret HaDibrot spins off and seems to be somewhat of a detail. And we don't really understand why it's such an important part of the Ten Commandments. You know, the idea of idolatry, you know, and believing God, granted. Shabbat, granted. Kibud Horim, the family structure, granted. And all the prohibitions of the don'ts against murder, against this and that, we understand that. But don't use God's name in vain in a framework of an oath, in a Shavuah. I can understand why it's an Aveira. But the question is, why is it so much part of the Aseret HaDibrot? What's so critical about this? Lo tisa Hashem Hashem Elokecha Lashav. You kind of expect such a pasuk in Parshat Kedoshim, or maybe in the Sefer Dvarim somewhere, Parshat Ki Tetzeh. It seems a little bit out of sync that this should be an integral part of the Aseret HaDibrot. Why? So, you know, Jackie Mason once said, you know, Goy asked him, why do Jews answer questions with other questions? And the response was, why not? And then, so we're going to try to ask another question and then try to resolve the first question. And the question is, we don't use God's name of Yud Kei Vav Kei. We always have a bimkom. We have, in baseball language now, it's called a designated hitter. We use a permanent substitute name. So number one, when we daven, the permanent substitute is Aleph Dalet Nun Yud. And even then, we don't say it unless it's in the context of Chacha. We say Baruch Atah. So what do we say? We say Hashem. Because we don't want to say Aleph Dalet Nun Yud. But Aleph Dalet Nun Yud is already a substitute for Yud Kei Vav Kei. We don't even say that. So we're very, very careful with Hashem's name. So what do we say? Baruch Atah Hashem. From right there. Why do we say Hashem? Hashem is the name. That's okay to say Hashem, 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 Hashem. What does it mean, Hashem? Hashem means the name. So why do we use the word Hashem to indicate it's the replacement of one of the Shemot? Well, because it's one of the names. So we're saying Bovot Hashem. The number one, when a person is in training, in chinuch, and it could be a boy or girl, in training for davening, for brachot, let's say for a bar mitzvah, whatever it is, the worst thing in the world is to a teacher to say Hashem in the context of the teaching. Because I have already heard bar mitzvah kids get up, Baruch Hu et Hashem, Hamboach. No, it's not Hashem. Then the kid is completely mixed up already, and he can't even get the bracha out, and you've messed them up. And the worst is when you train them to lane the parsha without saying Hashem's name, but to say Hashem. And you expect that under pressure of the bar mitzvah, under stress, he's going to remember each time that it's that he drilled into his head, Hashem, Elokim, 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 Elokecha, that he's going to say it right when he lanes. It's inevitable that he's going to say it wrong. But not only is it a pedagogical mistake, but it's also halakhically wrong. Because when a person is doing something for purposes of chinuch, then chinuch has to be done right. You have to train somebody to do it correctly. The famous Reb Chaim, the Rav's grandfather, who said in the context of the mitzvah of Arbat Aminim, so sometimes there was an etrog that was a pasul, so they sell it for 5 shekel. It's for children. Reb Chaim says, you don't give a kid an etrog that's pasul. You don't have to spend 1,000 shekel for an etrog for a child. But if you're going to educate the child for the mitzvah of Arbat Aminim, the object has to be and kasher enough that an adult over bar mitzvah could make a bracha on it. So it has to be a chefetz that kasher. You cannot have a scenario where you give a kid something that's pasul, and that's something that a lot of people don't know. They think that, alright, it's pasul, so give it to a kid. No! The Reb Chaim said it's anti-chinuchi. It's contrary to what chinuch really is all about. Chinuch means that you educate that the object of the mitzvah and the performance of the mitzvah is correct. That's called chinuch. And so therefore, if you're teaching brachot, you're teaching tefillah, you're teaching kriyat haTorah, you teach it correctly with saying Hashem's name correctly. And you can also point out that not to misuse Hashem's name, stam, as they say. But it all comes back to this pasuk, lo tisa Hashem Hashem alakecha lashav. Do not use God's name in vain, or raise God's name in vain. Ki lo yenakeh Hashem et asher yisa et shmo lashav. God will not cleanse anyone who raises his name in vain. Now that's a pretty serious charge. Ki lo yenakeh Hashem, which means there's no kapara. This is not a simple avera. There's no forgiveness. There's no atonement. Where do we have a scenario of an avera in the Chumash and there's no atonement? It doesn't exist. And here you have one. Ki lo yenakeh Hashem et asher yisa et shmo lashav. If you just jump down to source number 3, the Rambam tells us with regard to the process of tshuva. Sa'ir ha-mishtaleach, the goat that is sent off to the midbar, the desert, the Judean desert, la'azazel, la'sa'ir la'azazel, Lefi shehu kapara al kol Yisrael, because it atones for the sins of all of Am Yisrael, Kohen Gadol mitvade alav al lashon kol Yisrael. The Kohen Gadol says confession on behalf of all of Klal Yisrael. Right? It's in our Musaf Yom Kippur davening. Shneimar, as it says, mitvade alav et kol avonot bnei Yisrael. Sa'ir mishtaleach, this goat that sent off to the desert, mechaper al kol averot shebetorah. Atones for all the sins, hakalot vehachamurot, the easier averot and the more serious averot. Bein she'avar bezadon, bein she'avar b'shgaga, whether you were deliberate when you did the sin, whether it was somewhat accidental, bein shehodalo, bein shelo hodalo, whether you confessed, whether you didn't confess, hakol mitkaper b'sa'ir mishtaleach. It's like a wild card type of technique, and it just cleanses everything. V'hu she'yaseh tshuva, provided that the person does tshuva. Rambam here takes a stand in a machloket, a masechet yoma, whether there is kapara with tshuva or it could happen even without tshuva, which is amazing that there could be such a halachic animal called atonement without tshuva. I mean, why does God even do that? But the Rambam takes a stand and he says v'hu she'yaseh tshuva. At least the person has to regret what he did or she did and so on. Aval im lo asa tshuva, ein aseir mechaper ela ala kalot. That Ram says, but with regard to the easier averot, then the sa'ir mishtaleach wipes out all the easy sins, even without tshuva. It's only the serious averot. So what are the serious averot? Ramam has to give us a definition. Mayin hakalot, mayin hachamurot. So hachamurot, the more serious ones are, hein shechayvim alehem mitat beidin o karet. If the Torah says that there's capital punishment, irrespective of the fact that Chachamim took a negative stand on capital punishment, and they said that a Beit Din that executes once in 70 years is a bloody Beit Din, because they tried very, very hard not to bring the end game to an execution in reality. But the fact that a person knows that he's chayav mita, that the obligation, it's a capital punishment offense, already puts into the category of a very, very, very serious avira. And what is karet? Well, it depends who you talk to. I mean, that's a machloket. The Rambam, let's just explain first everybody's thinking, and then we get to the unique Rambam position. Everybody's thinking is that a person who dies below under the age of 60 is called karet. That's what most of the Rishonim seem to say, and they even cite a Gemara that says that one of the Amoraim celebrated his 60th birthday, and this became the source in many Hasidic sources of making a big splash at the 60th birthday, because it indicates that you for sure never did an Avera that carries with it the penalty of Karet. Karet is b'nichrata nefesh ha'im yamer, you've been cut off. But the Rambam says this has nothing to do with age, but it means a loss or forfeiting of one's olam haba. Now, the question is, what's more serious? Certainly in a theological sense, losing of olam haba is much more serious. And the Rambam believes, he says it, he explains it in the 8th chapter of the Hilchot Teshuvah, is, and karet are really the heavy-duty averot, like eating in Yom Kippur and violating Shabbat in the case where there's no opportunity for capital punishment, and not doing a Brit Milah, and eating chametz on Pesach. I mean, they're really the heavy-duty averot, carry with it karet. So those are the chamurot. So here, only a person does tshuva, does the sa'ir mishtaleach lazazel deal with it. But then he says, and it's underlined, u'shvat shaf v'sheker, an oath, that I insert in parentheses, with God's name, this is only with God's name, an oath with God's name, that turns out to be useless or a lie. Avo pisha ein ben karet. The Torah does not slap on a punishment of karet on the shvot sheker and shvot shav. Harei hein men achamurot. They nevertheless belong to the serious category. Why? Ushar mitzvot lo tasei u'mitzvot tasei she'ein ben karet hein akalot. Why is the shvot sheker and shvot shav the use though the misuse of God's name from the chamurot? Because if the Torah says ki lo yenake Hashem et asher yisa et shmo lashav, you better believe this is serious, very serious. And if you take a look at source 4, look at how serious it is. We know that in the context of a Beit Din, many times the dayanim hear the sides, and they and you know, Reuven is claiming that Shimon owes him money because, let's say, he lent him money and now we're not getting paid back, or he did damage to me and he's not paying for the damage, whatever it is, or I asked them to watch my car for me while I'm abroad, and I come back and the car's all smashed up, and so on. So there, you learn Barba Matzia, and you see the different grades of being a shomer or shomeret. Well, it depends. Like, did you do him a favor? Did he pay you? You know, they're all different levels of obligations. So sometimes the dayanim will tell the fellow, listen, you believe that you're excused. Okay, you know, there's a reasonable side to your case, but I want you to, the three dayanim, we want you to fortify your claim by taking an oath in the name of God. Oath in the name of God, this is what I want to do. Notice, to lie in his face, I'm willing to do, but to take an oath in the name of God that my story is credible, you know, I don't want to start up with a Kadosh Baruch Hu. So, no, there are people like that. They make distinctions, right? He's willing to, there are people I know that are willing to sell you a used car, you know, just forgetting just a little bit to tell you a little bit about the history of the car, that its transmission is going to fall apart next week and things of that. But, you know, he wouldn't eat in your house because you don't have all the requisite ashkaras. I mean, you have such people, right? We know. So, with regard to being serious about God's name, this you're very frum, you know, they're very careful. But to lie in the face, you know, this you're okay with, you know, to cheat and save yourself some money, that you're willing to do. So there's a thing called Shvata Dayanim. So the Gemara says, Tanu Rabbanan, it's source number 4. It says in the Braita, Shvata Dayanim, af hi bilshona ne'emra. And this has to be done also with a specific expression and use of Shem Hashem. Omrim lo, hevi yodea, you shall know. שכל העולם כולו נזדזע בשעה שאמר הקדוש ברוך הוא בסיני לא תישא את שם השם אלוקיך לשווא. There was an earthquake. The whole world shook when HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Lo tisa et shem Hashem alekecha l'sham. Now, again, I'm not a seismologist, and I don't have the records of 3,500 years ago to measure exactly how much. What the Chazal was saying was, this is obviously a type of expression of the world went into shock. That this was serious. This was serious. People really took this seriously. So much so, that there were many, many people in the Middle Ages who were really tzaddikim, and I'm talking about serious tzaddikim, that even if they were right in a litigation court in Beit Din, they'd rather pay than take an oath. In other words, the Dayanim said, listen, you take an oath that your story is credible, we'll let you off the hook. If you don't want to take the oath, we have no other choice, but we're going to have to favor the other fellow. There are such scenarios in halacha. And the guy says, but I'm right, but I don't want to take the oath. You don't want to take the oath. You don't want to say Shem Hashem. So I'm willing to pay. I'm willing to pay and sustain a loss, a financial loss, so that not to compromise my integrity on Shem Hashem. Because I think I'm right. You know, some people a lot of times think they're right, and then they're proven wrong. That can happen. As they say in this country, Hayu Dvarim Olam. These things have happened. So a person who's very, very careful about Shem, the misuse of Shem Hashem, will not even take an oath, even when he or she thinks at the moment, I'm right. So, but you never know what's going to be in 5 years. Might turn out that I was off the mark completely. And retroactively, I stumbled on a Shvuat Shav, or Shvuat Sheker. So I don't want to be held accountable to that. The problem was, this became a very big problem, that a person who's a real thief, and a real no-goodnik, and a real mushchat, exploits the situation. So there was a lot of exploitation in the Middle Ages where they knew that if I'm going to claim in Beit Din that such and such owes me money, and that guy could get off the hook with an oath, but he's not going to take an oath because he's a tzaddik, I'll be able to get money from this guy. Isn't that a terrible thing? And I'm telling you, it happened. It happened. The exploitation of Yirat Shamayim. Exploitation of Yirat Shamayim. You know that somebody's God-fearing, and because of that, you exploit it for your own benefit. It's a terrible, terrible thing. And unfortunately, I say with great busha that these things, unfortunately, have happened. Now, let's see how it pans out further in halacha. In source number 5, in Masechet Brachot, it says, "V'amar Rav." Had the Amorah Rav, and some say it was another Amorah, Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, Reish Lakish, Ve'amrina, and some say it was Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish said it together. Whereas we have a little bit of a problem here, where's the source? There are three possibilities, but what's the difference? The halacha is the halacha. Kol ha-mavarech bracha she'ina tzricha, anybody who says a bracha, pronounces a bracha, that's unwarranted, over mishum lo tisa. Is gets the avera of lo tisa et shem Hashem alekecha l'shav, which means that before a person makes a bracha, you better be sure that you're obligated in the bracha, and you have the right bracha also. That you have the right bracha. And that means, and believe me, this I think in the chinuch of children, this is really It is dealt with. I think kids do grow up with a sense that a bracha is serious. You don't just stop, make brachot. The bracha has to be anchored to a situation where a person is obligated in making the bracha. And the nusach, the language of the bracha, has to be appropriate. As a matter of fact, you know, in the summer, usually in the 9 days, at the Gush, they have the Yemei Iyun Tanakh. If any of you have never done this before, it's highly recommended, but get ready to see 4,000 people stampede along Shvut in 5 days to learn Tanakh. It's magnificent. So for the last few years, they've added on. It's a 5-day geshaft from Sunday to Thursday, but the last 2 days of that week, Wednesday and Thursday, there's a whole program of English speakers as well. So I've been doing that for the last few years. So this year, I'm speaking in English on what I called biblical phrases. You know, certain, let's say a half a pasuk, whatever, that inspires the nusach of the bracha. And in order to really understand the bracha, you really have to know the pasuk in context. Right? Every child has learned the bracha motzi lechem in haaretz. Have you ever given any thought, where does that phrase, who made up hamotzi lechem in haaretz? People say anshei knesset gdola. Okay, fine. So they were good in language. I assume yes. They were good in phraseology, in poetics. All this, yes, 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 yes. But where did they get it from? They're lifted out of Tanakh, so out of context. So in Tehillim, Kuf Zayin and Kuf Dalet, Baruch Nafshi, that we say on Rosh Chodesh. So it says lehotzi lechem in haaretz. You have to see the whole pasuk. You have to see the whole pasuk to understand what Chazal had in mind. That when we say every time we take a slice of bread or a bagel or whatever, what exactly do we mean when we say that bracha? Now, of course, what do you mean? If I understand what you're saying, well, is that what the pasuk had in mind in Tehillim Kuf Dalet? So I'm not going to tell you now. You have to register and come to the shir. You know, right? But if you're nice, I'll tell it to you afterwards. Right? I'm giving you a sneak preview. Because I remember once, it was the first year I was in Ramot. It was 1988. And I gave a darshan Yom Kippur on the Matana Tokef. So it says, Adam yisodo me'afar v'sofo le'afar v'nafsho yavi lachmo. There's a whole poem there about how human existence is temporary, as opposed to Kadosh Baruch Hu, Vata hu melech kel chai v'kayam, right? Melech chai v'kayam, Kadosh Baruch Hu is forever. Ein kitzvad b'shnotecha v'ein keitz l'aruch yamecha, a whole poem about the eternity of Kadosh Baruch Hu. But it's all against the background of the temporalness of man. So how does it say, Adam yisodo me'afar v'sofo le'afar? Mashul, I'll give you an example, an analogy. Kecheres hanishpar, kechatsir yavesh, kecel over, chalom ya'uf. So, I remember that time I was less sophisticated. Anan poreach. I was less sophisticated, but I had the good fortune of having a daughter who knew Tanakh by heart. So, my daughter Ahuva. So I said, by the way, I think I have a hunch that each phrase was lifted out of a pasuk, and you really have to understand the context of the pasuk to understand what the paitan of the Natana Tokev was all about. So, you know, it didn't take her long. You know, she starts telling me, Yishayahu this, and Yirmiyahu that, and it was a wonderful drasha. Right? But then I realized, this is a long time ago, I'm talking about 1988, I realized that there's a lot to this, that every time there is a phrase in a tefillah or a bracha, if you see the discussion in Chazal about that phrase, then you're going to start understanding the pasuk. Like Yitgadal v'Yitkadash or Yitgadel v'Yitkadesh, the whole machloket, do you say it in Aramaic or in Hebrew? The whole Kaddish is written in Aramaic, but somehow the Vilna Gaon said that the 10 expressions of Shevach to God should be said in Hebrew, not in Aramaic. So that's why you hear sometimes people saying Yitgadel v'Yitkadesh. But we know that it's based on a pasuk in Yechezkel Lamed Zayin, Vitgadilti v'Yitkadishti. Okay, so what does it mean making God big? How much bigger can He become? So what does it mean big? So in order to understand that, I have to take it to the whole discussion of Hakel, Hagadol, Hagibor, Vahanora. So what does it mean that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Gadol? So as kids, you know, we grew up on Sesame Street. Didn't we all grow up on Sesame Street, right? No? You know, right?
Howdy Doody.
Howdy Doody, yeah. Yeah. That was non-educational, but Sesame Street was gewaldic, right? So ask your great-grandchildren, they'll tell you. You need great-grandchildren for two things, to help you with your cell phones, right? And computers, of course. And, you know, to tell you about Sesame Street. So, right. So Grover, one of the characters, and in the Hebrew version of a Chof Sum Sum, his name is Kruvi. So he would say, you know, mazikadon, mazikatan. You know, what's big and what's small. So he was teaching the kids the difference between large and... So of course that doesn't work when in advertisement, the industrial psychologists have suggested already to the advertisement people that the word small doesn't go over well in advertisement because it means something marginal and so on. So everything has to be big. So if there are three sizes of cornflakes and Rice Krispies in America, big, large, and jumbo. So if you want the small box, you buy the one that says big. Because there is no small. Small doesn't work, right? Right? What's a katan? Katan doesn't work. But Grover was teaching kids the difference between big and small. So can you use that about a Kadosh Baruch Hu? You're going to say he's a gadol. Or can he be katan? Well, what kind of gadol does it mean? And if you're saying Yitgadal, You're saying he's going to be big. I mean, what is he now? Small? Miniature? Medium height? Medium rare? I mean, where are we with the Kadosh Baruch Hu? What does that mean?
Forever.
What does it mean, Yitzgadal, that he's going to be great, big, large, jumbo? What does it mean? What did Yechezkel mean when he said, Vitgadilti, Vitgadishti? And what did Moshe Rabbeinu have in mind in Dvarim when he said, Hagadol Legibov Anora? And why did Yirmiyahu delete it at the time of the Churban? Because that's the key. That's the key. That Yirmiyahu deletes it and Anshe Knesset Gdolah put it back. And then we figure out what Gadol means, and then we understand the Tefillah of Kaddish. I just gave you over 3/4 of the shir.
Which year?
Good, good, good. Then. Not telling you now. So I really think there's a real shear here. Because we daven, we say brachot all the time, and my contention is that there are many, many phrases that are lifted out of context from Tanakh. And in order to understand them in context, in order to understand them in the tefillah, you have to see the pasuk in context, and then by extrapolation, bring it over to the tefillah and see what Anshe Knesset Gdolah were doing with that phrase. Instead of just what we say in Yiddish, it's called upgedavent. You know what upgedavent means? Upgedavent. Sure? Upgedavent doesn't have much value. Does not have much value. But we're all guilty. Don't worry. Have no fear. We're all guilty. So kol ha-mabarek bracha she'enat zricha means you have to be very careful with bracha. And this kicks in another halacha. I'm sorry, yeah? Very good. Very good. Very good. Very, very good. I'm going to repeat what we just heard now. You mamish stole the words of my mouth. This kicks in another halacha of safek brachot lekula or lehakel. Whenever one is in doubt if he or she should make a bracha, skip the bracha. When in doubt, don't make the bracha. And this is, for example, let's assume a person is not sure if he or she did a mitzvah that carries with it a bracha. It can happen. You know, sometimes our minds work in such wonderful ways. I'm not sure if I counted the sfira or not. Has it not happened? Come on. It happens. I'm not sure. All right, count it again. You know, Hayom Shnei Yamim La'Omer. Do I make a bracha? No. Because maybe you made it already with bracha. So you're only counting it now bistafek, because of a doubt. We say liyat bitachon, just to be on the safe side. So if you're doing a mitzvah, just to be on the safe side, don't make a bracha. Because you may have made the bracha the first time around. Second time would be a bracha she'einat zricha. And by the way, they're two different categories, but they're first cousins. Bracha levatala, totally in vain. And bracha she'einat zricha, a bracha that they don't have to make. Because a bracha levatala is just walking around the street, not eating or drinking anything, and you say, that's a bracha levatala, classic. What are you making a bracha for? I'm drinking water or eating ice cream when you have the water or ice cream right there. That's levatala, that's in vain. And smacks from lo tisha Hashem Hashem alakecha lashav. Bracha she'inat zricha means, one second, there is a bracha in Svirat HaOmer, but it's not necessary for me to make that bracha because I may have made the bracha already. So it would become a bracha lashav. It would be in vain if I would make it. There's a possibility that I might stumble into a bracha levatala because I'm doing it a second time around, and that's not necessary, and that's wrong, and that's why it becomes a bracha that's levatala or lashav, and so on. Yeah, raksha.
This works also for Birkat Hamazon.
Birkat Hamazon is follows. We have a principle. We have a principle, safek d'oraita l'chumra, if the doubt whether you did or did not do a mitzvah, so we say if it's a biblical mitzvah, do it again. Safek d'rabanan l'hakel, if the doubt is a rabbinic mitzvah, forget about it. You don't have to do it again. The question is, what's the big deal? I'll do it again. What's the big deal? I'm not sure if I did a mitzvah. I'm not sure. For example, there might be a dispute on a particular issue in halacha, but the issue at hand is a rabbinic issue, and then one lenient and one machmir. So the halacha says you can go with the lenient view. Go with the lenient view. That's what it means. Safek the rabbanan lahakel. Every bracha is really the Rabbanan, except for Birkat HaMazon. We're going to get to your point. Every bracha is really the Rabbanan. So why do you have to have a special principle, Safek the Rabbanan lehakel? It's Safek the Rabbanan. Why do you have to have a special principle, Safek brachot lehakel, when a bracha by definition is the Rabbanan, and we have a general principle, if it's a doubt in a rabbinic add-on, we go lenient. Lenient means don't say it again, don't perform it again, because we're being lenient. Because apparently there's an inclination to say that brachot is different than other rabbinic add-ons. That even though we understand that it's rabbinic, but it's like somehow attached to the mitzvah itself. We want to think that maybe it's attached to the mitzvah. And if it's attached to the mitzvah, so if I'm repeating the mitzvah, if I'm counting Sfirat HaOmer again, why can I not say, Asher Kitshanu B'mizvotah V'tzivanu al Sfirat HaOmer, maybe a second time? What's wrong with that? So in order to cancel that, you have to have a special principle of safek brachot lahakel. Why do I say this? Because there's one example where in a situation of doubt, the Rambam says not only do you repeat the mitzvah, but you also repeat the brachot. One example. And they are the brachot surrounding Kriyat Shema. What if a person in the morning is not sure if he or she read Kriyat Shema in the morning? Without getting into the point of women exempt from the mitzvah, mitzvah, taseh, shazman, grama, women are perfectly invited to join the troops here and fulfill the mitzvah of Kriyat Shema. No problem. And with Kriyat Shema goes along the brachot, before and after. Yotzei Amarot, and Avat Olam, and the bracha at the end, Gaal Yisrael. Fine, those are the brachot Kriyat Shema. At morning there are 3, 2 plus 1, and night there's 4, 2 plus 2, surrounding the Kriyat Shema. So the Rambam says, safek kara, safek lo kara. A person not sure if she read the Kriyat Shema, yes or no. So you have to read it again. It's a mitzvah min Torah. And then the Rambam says, v'chozer v'korei im abrachot. U'mavarech. V'chozer v'korei im abrachot. You repeat the Shema, and you say the brachot. So Rabbi Yosef Karo, the Sephardi, 400 years after the Rambam, 400 years after Rambam, he goes ballistic. He says, I don't understand. What do you mean with the brachot? I understand why you have to read Shema again. Instead of that, because if it's a biblical mitzvah, you're not sure you did it, do it again. Fine, you know, be on the safe side. But why obligate the person to read the brachot again? That those are rabbinic add-ons. So the Rav gave a very nice interpretation to understand the Rambam. Says that the Chazal, when they authored the brachot before and after Shema, they're not really birkat ha-mitzvah. They're not like Asher Kitshanu B'Zavet Zivanu al Kriyat Shema. There's no such bracha. The brachot surrounding Kriyat Shema explain and interpret the three chapters of Shema. The first chapter is the echad quality of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. Against the Zoroastrian movement or ideology in the days of Chazal that believed that there were two deities in the world, one that functioned in the daytime and one that functioned in nighttime. So against them we say, Yotzer Or Uvore Choshech. And in Ma'ariv we say, Umavir Yom Umevi Laila. It's the same God. And that's the root of why we read Shema morning and night. What's wrong with one a day multiple vitamin? Why do we have to have Shema twice? The answer is that at night we should acknowledge that He's also the master of the day. And at the day we acknowledge He's also the master of the night. So the bracha Yotzer Hami'orot in plural gives backing to the Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. And then comes the second bracha, which is Avar Abba or Avat Olam, no mishenev yidam nusach Ashkenaz Asfar. But it's like a Birkat HaTorah type of thing. V'ha'er inenu v'toratecha v'dabek libenu v'sotecha. And that conforms to V'yam Shemot Yishmol Mitzvotai. It's Kabbalat Mitzvot. Kabbalat Mitzvot, and it's Mitzvah Talmud Torah. V'limadetem otam et b'neichem l'daber bam. So that matches that second bracha. The third bracha, the third parasha of Shema, is the Mitzvah Tzitzit. But we include it because of Zecher Letziyat Mitzrayim at the end. That's Geula. That's the third bracha of Gaal Yisrael. And while in Ma'ariv we have another bracha, Hashkivenu, but Hashkivenu is linked to Gaal Yisrael. So it's like two, which is really one. So that bracha, or brachot, morning and night, conform to the third parasha of Shema. So the Rav said, what Chazal did was, they attached the interpretation and explanation of the three parashot of Shema with these brachot. So it makes not a bit of a difference whether you're saying the Shema in the requisite time framework. The Gemara says that you can read the brachot even after the Zman of Kriyat Shema. There's a certain time, you look at the calendar, until what time can you read Shema? I missed the time. I'm at the 11 o'clock minyan in the morning at the Shtiblach. It's as the disclaimer there says, the last minyan, 11 o'clock, lachar zman kriyat shma v'tfilah. So everybody knows that already. And they're davening anyway, right? They say shma. A lot of times in shuls on Shabbat, 9 o'clock minyanim, they say shma in certain times during the year. It's by the time they get to shma, 20 to 10, it's after the zman. Besanda, but we say the shma anyway. We say the shma with the brachot. Why? Gemara says you can say it. And the Rav explained, he says, that's why the Rambam believed that if a person is in doubt, if he or she said Shema, you can not only repeat the Shema, but you read the Brachot too. So that is like unique. So there's room to suggest that maybe every other Bracha also, the Bracha hits or links to the Mitzvah. So no. With regard to the other Brachot, Safek Brachot, Lahakel. We are lenient with regard to the other brachot if we are in doubt. Which means every time a person is in doubt, if he or she did a mitzvah that carries with it a bracha, not all mitzvot carry a bracha, but those mitzvot that do carry with it a bracha, the doubt is on two levels. The doubt is on the biblical, the doubt is on the rabbinic. Because it's ridiculous to think, I'm absolutely sure I made the bracha, v'tzivanu al netilat lulav. I just don't remember if I shook the lulav. The statistical probability of something like that happening is so nil that you remember for sure you made the bracha on the lulav, you just don't remember taking it. When's that going to happen? I remember making the bracha v'tzivanu lishma kol shofar. I just don't remember that anybody blew the shofar. it's illogical. So therefore, if a person is in doubt, if he or she did the mitzvah, you're also in doubt whether he made the bracha. That's for sure. So how do you handle it? Do you handle it that on the Doraita level you do the mitzvah again? On the Rabbanan level you don't do the mitzvah? Because it's affect the Rabbanan lakel. But if I mention this, let me just say another point. So I asked the Rav once a question in my various drivings with him. I said, what does Safek de Rabbanan Lahakel mean? What does it mean that if there's a doubt on a rabbinic, you can be lenient? You can be lenient, but if I want to be strict, you know, I can be strict. Or you have to be lenient. Ooh, can you imagine such a view? You have to be mekel, right? I know people involved in shidduchim work. You know, sometimes they want to know if the family is a makel, because if it's a family is a makel, that usually lowers the stock. In my book, it actually uppers the ante, because the Gemara says kocha dehetera adif. The power of the mater is actually stronger, because the person who says something is okay has to stand on solid halachic ground. And if somebody is not sure what to do and is not on solid halachic ground, just say, just don't do it. Everything don't do. You know, like, why don't do it? Because they're not sure. So they say, don't do it. But if you say absolute, it's okay. So you're standing on solid halachic ground. So the kochah dehetera, the Gemara feels that the Beit Hillel is a stronger position than the Beit Shammai because they are makel. Today,
so why not? Is not saying a bracha lahakel. Why if you that's lahachmir? You know, you can't say bracha.
Lahakel here means that we're mekel in the sense we don't want them to make another bracha. The question is why? Because we're worried with brachot. We're worried about something else. If I tell you to do a mitzvah act, all right, you're not sure if you lit Chanukah candles, light it again, fine, you know, or not light it again, it's an act, you know. And here's where Chachamim kicked in. They said, so if it's a safek, you know, on a rabbinic, you know, let go. You don't have to do it again. My question to the Rav was, you don't have to do it again, or you're not allowed to do it again. With regard to a bracha, if you make the bracha again and you actually did it the first time around, you've stumbled into the avera of lo tisa Hashem al kenecha lashav. There's another area where the halakha specifically says go easy, and that's in the halachot of avilut, mourning. You know, I always tell people in Shiva they're busy plowing through all kinds of books because for some reason or another they don't teach it in yeshivas, and it's a mistake. The Rav felt it was a big mistake. It's part of Torah, and you have to learn avilut also. You have to know how to. You have to learn how to sit Shiva. You have to learn nichum avilut. These are halachot. So I tell people it's 10% halacha, 90% minhag. You know, I said, whatever you do, you're right. Whatever you do, you're wrong. You know, like you're always going to have some book, some sefer, going to whip out and say, this is what's done. Okay, the seder. So, The Safek de Rabbanan Lahakel, so what does it mean that you have to be Mekel or you can be Mekel? Unfortunately today people have used somebody who's lenient as a yardstick that there's something wrong with his Yirat Shamayim. But it's not the case. It's really, really, really not the case. It's wrong. It's downright wrong. So I actually asked the Rav permission to go on, because sometimes you ask a question, you wait for an answer. But sometimes I had questions that I already had answers, but you don't go and tell the Rav what you think the answer is unless he has permission. So I asked permission. That's the way to do it. You have to answer. The Rav always said, yeah, let's hear what you have to say. It was usually nonsense, but all right. And he would tell me nicely, you know, why the answer could be something else. And that's a very healthy learning process. So long as it wasn't in front of the 100 guys in the shir, I couldn't care less if the Rav told me that it was nonsense. You know, that was okay. But here I suggested something. The Rav didn't think it was nonsense at all. I said the following, that the Rambam in that very section, it's called Hilchot Mamrim, where he talks about the Safek de Rabbanan, Safek de Oraita, he's talking about the Avera of Bal Tosif and Bal Tigra. It's found twice in the Chumash and Sefer Dvarim. You're not allowed to add onto the Torah, you're not allowed to delete from the Torah. These are so critical that in the 13 Anim Amins, you even have an Anim Amin that don't add and don't delete. They're very, very critical principle in the Torah. So I said that, and the Rambam goes further in saying, that when teaching Torah, you should not mark it, I mean, this is my word now, mark it a mitzvah that's only the Rabbanan as if it's the right thing. You can't come and teach Chanukah and Purim and say it's biblical. Rambam says that's a violation of Bal Tosif. Or you can't take something that's clearly biblical and say, well, it's only rabbinic. Kiddush Friday night is only rabbinic add-on. That would be Bal Tigra. You can't do that. It's not only, when you teach the Torah, it has to be taught in its proper boxes. Is it the Oraita? Is it the Rabbanan? Is it a Chumra? Is it a Minhag? It has to be classified appropriately. And if it's not, the Rambam says you are in violation of Bal Tosif or Bal Tigra. So I said as follows. If a person stumbles onto a halachic area in a suffix, he's got a doubt to go this way or that way, and treats it, L'Chumra, what basically the person is doing is acknowledging that the subject at hand is a biblical issue, and that's why I'm being machmer. But if the subject at hand is only of a rabbinic nature, you have stumbled on Bal Tosif. You have upgraded the subject to a level of biblical by being machmer, and that's an avera in itself. And he said that's correct shot in the Rambam. But, just to be fair, the Talmud Yerushalmi in Maaseh Brachot says about Rabbi Meir, and this means as follows. There's a difference between personal hanhaga, the way you personally conduct your halachic life for yourself, and the way you teach halacha for others. So what I just said now about Safek Doraita L'Chumra, Safek D'Rabbanan L'Kula, and if it's a rabbinic issue, you are necessarily obliged to go lenient, that's when you teach the subject. Because if you teach it wrong, people are going to think erroneously that the subject at hand was biblical. But at home, you want to be machmer? Give a machmer as much as you want. You can do whatever you want, every chumra in the book if you want. But you don't spread it to the neighborhood and say, because I'm doing it, everybody now has to do it.
And not be said that every rabbinic commandment is also a biblical commandment.
Yep. Correct. There's a certain biblical backing to all rabbinic add-ons, but that's, you know, we have to take that also with a grain of salt. It's true that Chachamim have the authority to add on, which gives backing to the rabbinic. That's why we're allowed to say on a bracha from the Rabbanan, Asher Kitchan Musav Vitzivanu, Ladik Neshel Chanukah, Val Mikam Gilah, and so on. The Gemara says that Mizar Shabbat Kod Gimel, Veheichan Tzivanu, where's the mitzvah? The mitzvah is Lo Tasur, Shal Avicha Viagetcha, Beseda. That's true. But having said that, there's still a distinction. There's still a distinction. The halacha clearly distinguishes between Doraita and the Rabbanan and makes it perfectly clear, and Rambam for sure, that has to be such. And hence, all of these become important in the context of Lo Tisa Hashem Hashem Alekecha L'Shav. That's why Safek the Brachot L'Akel. So we shouldn't stumble, God forbid, on a scenario of using a Kadosh Baruch Hu's name in vain. And most probably, that's why when we don't use God's name, Yudke Vavke, and we don't even say Aleph Dalet Nun Yud if it's not in the context of a Bracha, what do we say? Hashem. Oh, Ata Hashem. We have inculcated into our heads and our hearts the severity of Shem Hashem. Shem Hashem is very, 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 very serious. Okay, we will continue with this in Mitzvah Hashem next week. Yeah.
Just a quick question. Yeah. Something you said earlier concerning the individuals in Europe who not taking oath and whatever.
Right.
In America, when we go to court, they give you
take an oath.
We say we so firm.
Right. We do it in Sal also. Yeah. That means we basically are saying, I don't want to take an oath. So in Sal, we do this as well. That's how we do it.